Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
It's Jim Cramer here. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Don't miss a minute of the action.
Good Friday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer and David Faber. Futures are pretty solid here as investors react not only to the debate last night, but also the first official FDA approval for a COVID treatment. Intel, Mattel, Amex, and of course, the ongoing stimulus talks. Our roadmap begins with that big pharma boost. The president says a COVID vaccine is just weeks away, with J&J, Moderna, and Pfizer leading the way.
Plus, Gilead shares are up in the pre-market. The FDA approving its antiviral drug remdesivir as a treatment for the coronavirus. And Intel tumbling this morning. It is going to be down more than 10%. This despite what were better than expected earnings. But really, it's all about the chip maker showing new weakness in that data center business, Carl. And I know we're going to be spending a good amount of time on this. You got Bob Swan joining you later on Squawk Alley.
Yeah, that's a big story today. Of course, as we said earlier, though, Jim, pharma is the other big story. The president's comments, CureVac, obviously what we heard from Gilead and the FDA yesterday.
Yeah, look, I wish that the president were right about J&J. That's not right. The company has not said that. It's been very adamant that the time frame is very different. Just hate him or like him, the president got that wrong. And I'm sure J&J is anxious to try to make that clear. Moderna does have an earlier track because they got the blueprint quickly. But to put J&J in that spot is really a shame. We do have therapeutics, and I'm sure Meg will talk about remdesivir. That is not a surprise. It's been used throughout the country for the last 5 months. Regeneron probably is next with a therapeutic that works very well. I think a lot of what's happening today is because Europe was good in two places that were really shocking. Barclays did a great quarter. I mean, Barclays, and we saw the yield curve work yesterday in favor of the bank, so that might be a continued move. And then Daimler had a good point. Daimler had a good quarter. I don't even know how that's possible. Maybe Chinese sales, because a lot of their business is in China. But, you know, we have a carryover from Europe that's very, very strong. And I think, David, that sometimes you get a reaction from Europe that shocks you. And Barclays being good at a time when the yield curve is bending in the right way makes people excited about a group that's been very down and out. And Daimler, I think the orders are running here.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Europe is now, you know, obviously dealing with a resurgence of the virus, which we haven't talked about that much. I think we hit our highest number of cases. Was it ever? I think maybe we set a record.
Yesterday, yeah.
Right, Carl? Yep. Yeah. Yesterday, what was 73 or 77,000? Sorry.
77, yeah. Almost 78, and that surpasses the late July high.
So it's interesting, Jim, that we're seeing that. It was obviously a good amount of time was spent on it yesterday in terms of this, so the perception of, well, is it lockdown versus not lockdown, or how do you reopen an economy when people don't want to necessarily still participate fully in economic activity, even if you want them to, without getting control of the virus, which we clearly have not yet. Thankfully, though, the death rate is coming down, although we're still around 1,000 people dying every day. But to your point on J&J, I mean, listen, the president did say Moderna and Pfizer. We know that.
Right.
They're coming soon.
No, they are coming soon.
In terms of at least giving us the results.
Right.
And then potentially being in a position to get that emergency use from the FDA pretty soon. And then there's the therapeutics, which, I mean, he talked about, obviously he was treated with one, which is the Regeneron monoclonal antibody. I've talked a lot about what Merck has, which is MK-4482. It used to be EID-2801. Now it's actually got the name Molnupiravir. That's going to be the oral antiviral. Listen, that's going to be an important drug if and when it also gets emergency use.
Yes. What's difficult is, and I've just talked about this many times, and the CEO agrees with me, but Ken Frazier does not like to talk about things. and promote things until they're absolutely dead right.
Right.
I mean, Keytruda was clearly the, I think, or it is going to be the biggest drug of all time, but he would not give anyone false hope who has cancer. And it's directly related that to me and told me that because I remember the false hope I got with my mother when she was dying of cancer. He's just not going to play that. He just doesn't do that. The president's right about Pfizer. And the Moderna is, I mean, I think that there are a lot of people who are ready. There's a very good trial for Moderna going on in New York City. I chose not to be in that. I tried to get in the J&J trial, but it's hard. It's very hard to get into. And these things are very ongoing. Regeneron is by far my favorite. Because you see dramatic reaction instantly with Regeneron, instantly meaning in 2 or 3 days. But Carl, I think that there is a tremendous amount of sense that the trade-off is worth it. It's worth it to open up because the death rate's low. It's maybe not worth it to open up if you look at caseload. But I think the American people in many parts of the country have decided, you know what, the death rate is so low, let's open it up and let's have the people who are comorbidity, let them stay home. So it's flipped. And I think even Vice President Biden felt very reluctant to say that that we should lock down again. That point was hammered home in a couple of very severe jabs in last night's debate.
Yep, you're absolutely right. And speaking of the debate, Jim, you mentioned the sort of cautionary comments we've gotten from Ken Frazier of Merck, from the CEO of Pfizer, from Roche just this week. And it does conflict somewhat with what the president's timeline was last night. Take a listen really quick.
You also said a vaccine will be coming within weeks.
Yes.
Is that a guarantee?
No, it's not a guarantee, but it will be by the end of the year. But I think it has a good chance. There are two companies, I think, within a matter of weeks, and it will be distributed very quickly.
Can you tell us which companies?
Johnson & Johnson is doing very well. Moderna is doing very well. Pfizer is doing very well. And we have numerous others. Then we also have others that we're working on very closely with other countries, in particular Europe.
Let me follow up with you, and because this is new information, you have said a vaccine is coming soon, within weeks now. Your own officials say it could take well into 2021 at the earliest for enough Americans to get vaccinated. And even then, they say the country will be wearing masks and distancing into 2022. Is your timeline realistic?
No, I think my timeline is going to be more accurate.
Jim, we'll see. I mean, the Roche CEO this week said before year end was, quote, completely unrealistic.
Right.
But then, you know, the CureVac preclinical trial news today does remind you that there's another wave of candidates behind the ones we're talking about so much.
Right. I think the Oxford AstraZeneca is another one that people want very much to be in the trial for. I think that a lot of what you're doing, you're getting your doc, you're going to your primary physician, and your primary physician is telling you, please go into the majority is go into one of these if you can. Now, there are a very different age group and very different pre-existing illnesses that allow you to get in or not. I think the president's timeline has been aggressive. He has always been aggressive. I think that Dr. Fauci would say that. And Dr. Fauci was lumped in last night with a group of, you know, there was a I don't even want to say it, okay? I once got in trouble already saying something that imitated the president. I'm not going that way. But I do think that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, but I think it is much more, as David says, it's much more the idea that you're still going to go to the hospital, but you're going to get out of the hospital. And that is a huge win, David.
Well, it is right now. Yeah. And again, but when we get these earlier, when we get the therapeutics that are available earlier, whether it be Regeneron, which is still going to have to be infused, or the Lilly monoclonal antibody, mm-hmm. or as I said, the Merck drug, those could be significant game changers. Listen, for a guy who dissembles a lot, being the president, I actually think he was quite accurate last night. I don't think that was new news, what he said. Pfizer and Moderna. He threw J&J in there.
Why did he throw J&J in?
Yeah, but that was, I mean, that was sort of
I know, splitting hairs.
It was probably accidental. You know, he was naming right. some of the names, but he was right. I mean, Moderna and Pfizer are the closest.
They are the ones.
They are probably going to give us at least data very soon. They could get emergency usage approval in the next few months.
Moderna might be November.
But at the same time, we're not going to obviously get a fully available vaccine for the majority of the population for many months,
right.
Which is what makes the antivirals.
Are we nitpicking by saying he mentioned the wrong drug company?
Yeah,
because Moderna.
Yeah. I mean, for him, that was right on the mark. I mean, let's be honest. Right? It's true. Now, by the way, New York's not a ghost town. That one I'll take issue with for those of us who live there. But, Carl, I will come back to that idea that you were just talking about and the idea that Jim was, which is you know, what I hear all day long and talking to the senior leaders of a lot of the firms that we know well is frustration that their younger people are not coming back to work.
Right.
And it's fascinating, actually. The people who are least vulnerable, Jim, 20s and 30s, early in their careers, who are off renting houses in Montana or wherever they may be, and don't want to come back. So, you know, again, New York, far, far, far from a ghost town. Anybody who lives there will tell you that. At the same time, Midtown office buildings, they're pretty quiet because people aren't coming back, even though they want them to.
Are you going to be the senior person who says, I want you back at the office?
That's the problem.
And then you get
COVID? They're not, you know, they've gone to neutral, but they're not demanding a lot of their employees come back. But they throw their hands up. I've had these conversations. I know you have, too. It's fascinating.
Yep.
We're saying we don't understand why they're not coming back.
Carl, I speak to hundreds of CEOs, and they're all spending, say, 2, 3, 4 days at the office.
Yes.
In order to inspire young people.
Yeah.
To go.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine?
It's definitely it's a kind of soft power to use a foreign policy analog, Jim. They're definitely trying to set by example. There's an unspoken nudge, I think you could say, from HR. Hey, let's do this. Management wants to see it. But to David's point, it's not a hard sell yet.
Right. But when I was at Goldman Sachs, I can tell you this would be my chance. I would stay there for 18 hours and leave my jacket on the chair so they thought I was there 24 hours.
Right. Well, you're going to get unprecedented FaceTime with your boss. And by the way, they've made a decision. I think what I'm hearing is that, listen, they can't effectively train people through Zoom.
No, you can't.
They just can't.
Plus, the elevators are viewed. Elevators are probably viewed as the most dangerous thing now that you've cleaned this up.
And you're wearing a mask. And you can, at this point, again, they're talking 10% of people coming in, Jim, so nobody's really at risk.
It's incredible, Carl.
Not a lot of risk.
When you try to, J.P. Morgan has these gigantic training programs. And the key to them is not Zoom. It's being one-on-one with them. So I totally understand where Jamie Dimon's coming from, but most industries, they're hard-pressed to say why younger people have to come in. And I just think this is a remarkable turn where the younger people are calling the shots. Estee Lauder has a program where on Fridays, you're the boss if you're a younger person, in order to get people to understand, the older people to understand what younger people are wearing. This is the opposite. 4 days a week, you're the boss. 1 day a week, the boss is the boss. And I find it rather incredible, given the fact that Zoom is not necessarily always effective. It's a bit of a Hollywood Squares when you've got a 40-person class. I mean, it's amazing. You know what was the most amazing thing last night, though, Carl? Was when my late father tripped Daniel Jones on the 20. People think it was just himself, but
well,
it was my late father.
Game. What happened? Oh, I guess I know what happened. The Eagles won.
Well, no, a ghost?
Yeah.
People say it was a ghost. I don't. I'm not concerned.
Was he
going to
go
father.
In? Well, I don't even know. Yeah, I'm completely clueless.
Oh, my God. Hey,
leading the division again, Jim.
That guy.
Congratulations
it's a shoe
on that.
We look
those
great.
Last two drives.
Yeah, what are you going to be? You're going to win the division at 4-12.
I'm not
we'll
defending
take a break.
Us.
We'll get to Intel. As David said, that miss on data center, B of A goes to a sell today. We'll talk to Bob Swan on Squawk Alley, I think, later this morning. Kudlow's on the tape once again, saying the ball is, quote, not moving much on stimulus relief. Meanwhile, futures are green. We're back in a minute.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Intel looks to open around 48.5, threatening to get close, Jim, to its summertime low set back in late July as B of A, as we said earlier, goes to an underperform with a target of 45. Data center again?
Yeah, now I know you have Bob Swan on later, which will be very good because, frankly, I think he got a pass on the conference call, in part because he's regarded as being a total gentleman, which he is. But the miss in the data center, when you read all the analyst comments, they're being very kind. The real issue here was competition. It was AMD with a better mousetrap. It's NVIDIA coming into the data center. And as much as Bob Swan would like to say, you know what, it's the margin compression is something you need to worry about. I think they have to worry greatly because I think they've underspent on product and overspent on buying back stock. Their capital allocation is not that good. This was a very bad quarter, and there were reasons to expect that it would be a great one. David, sometimes you get a quarter and the analysts aren't expecting much, and they just don't get even what they're expecting.
Yeah, I think, Jim, there'd been some expectation because, remember, it was last quarter when they came up with these with this manufacturing issue on the, what was it, the 7-nanometer, next-gen 7-nanometer chip.
Yeah, they couldn't do the 7, and AMD has the 7.
They didn't give anybody anything on whether they're fixing that, did they?
No, and the analysts did not rebel. They started. Initially, it started saying, listen, you haven't explained the gross margins. But again, Mr. Swan, because he is an eloquent, good man, and you'll find this, Carl, when you interview him, he was not held to a standard that I would have expected. Very little mention of his Mobileye initiative, automobile. He does not have inference chips. You know, inference chip is really rather amazing. That's one of the reasons I like Jensen and what he's done. The remarkable job he's done in NVIDIA is when you get into a Mercedes, and David, you listen to this because you're not going to do this, but if you go to Mercedes and you say, oh, man, is it hot in here? The air conditioning goes on. That's inference.
Wow.
Intel does not have inferential chips.
No, but there's a lack of clarity. I'm reading a B of A note here. They did downgrade the stock this morning.
They were the principal downgrader.
Yeah, but they say there's no clarity on when a decision's going to be made in terms of their exploring options to use, you know, other companies to make these 7-nanometer chips.
They need Taiwan Semi very badly.
Right, or go completely fabless, or for how long. It's also not clear if any foundry has either the spare capacity to make Intel's multiple transistors or the desire to help a competitor only for a small time frame. So there's no shortage of issues here, are there?
No,
are there?
And remember, Intel was the primary creator of the great foundries,
right?
The fabs. I mean, when I was an Intel-aholic, I went to a fabulous fab in Israel that had no people because it was the Sabbath. And then I went to a beautiful one in Ireland. And it was then a carbon copy of others. Carl, I always regarded Intel at one point as the greatest manufacturer we had in this country. Now people are saying they should outsource it.
I wonder, Jim, at what point did you stop being an Intel-aholic? It's been a while,
hasn't it? When they stopped having engineers and scientists run the company and went with salespeople and financial people.
It sounds like you're talking about Bob directly. We've had this discussion with him before.
You know, PayPal, he was at eBay. Look, again, you know, he's the CFO. Why am I so reluctant to knock the guy? It wasn't his choice. He didn't necessarily want to be. He actually would tell you. He told me on my show he didn't want the job, but he got the job. And having been to lunch with him, seen him. I mean, look, my show's not about friends. It's about money. But you do meet some people who are extraordinarily good and kind, but they're not necessarily in the right position.
Well, as you can see, Intel will be a drag on the Dow. We'll get that opening bell in just about 10 minutes. Don't go away.
The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura's been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
Welcome back. Time for a mad dash as we get ready for the opening bell. We still got 8 minutes, so we get started with trading for the last session of the week, The Gap.
Well, Dave, this is done in honor of what the heck you're wearing.
I think they are. These might actually be
I think
the
you
gap.
Really fell into the gap of that outfit. Incredible, this turn in The Gap. This is a remarkable turn. Matthew Boss first to identify it at J.P. Morgan. But they had Investor Day yesterday. And then, David, I'm using this because of you, but not because of your ridiculous outfit. They are shrinking to grow. I'm not kidding. Cowan, shrink to grow.
Does it say shrink
yes,
to grow?
Yes. And, yeah. And they have a hidden gem in Athleta, which right. could be a multi-billion dollar business against Lulu. But Old Navy's doing incredibly well. And that makes it so that you don't really have to worry as much about Banana Republic or Gap. I mean, a lot of people are saying, Jim, this is a mall story. It's bigger than that. And I have to congratulate the people who are running Gap because everyone thought that was just going to go the way.
Well, they did. Now, tell me a little about digital and what they're doing there. We all
not
know.
Not enough. They have a good database. I think they could do much more. That's a wide open area that's going to bring what people think is the next leg. In the same way that L Brands doesn't really have anything.
Well, I thought this was sort of done. I mean, there were a lot of people looking, even back in... David, well, that was the height of the pandemic. I mean, you know, the low for the market,
okay,
obviously,
so David,
but still.
David, work with me here.
Mall-based retailer.
Work with me. You,
yes,
you're
sir.
At home.
Yes.
Nobody sees you.
No.
You don't have to go outside.
No.
You wear, ending up, you know, you wear what we would call in Yiddish, schlumpadick outfit. And David?
Yes. I'm there.
Well done.
Thank you. I'm there today. I was like, oh, man, he's going to give me a lot of... By the way, I watched that Daniel Jones video.
No, that's it.
I've never seen anything like
that. No. I advise everyone to watch that just to be able to say, you know what, I'm better than that guy.
He's fast. But that was one of the sadder things I've seen in football lately.
I did it at the district championship. I did the same thing in track.
Congrats to your Eagles.
Yeah, my coach kicked me in the butt after
I did it. Or whoever grabbed him somehow put their... All right, anyway.
They were laughing on the sidelines. They had a lot to laugh about, the Giants. They found something to laugh about.
We got to go. We got an opening bell a few minutes away.
What the heck are you wearing?
Stay with us right here on Squawk on the Street.
Apple's iPhone 12 hitting stores in China today as pre-orders indicate pretty strong demand. Lines outside the stores in Shanghai, maybe not as long as they have been for similar launches, but of course a lot of ordering has gone online. The South China Morning Post today reports that global pre-orders for the 12 at least twice as high in the first 24 hours compared with the 11 last year. Jim, I mean, so many different dynamics on this particular phone, but we'll take what we can get.
Yes, and it's interesting to read the conflicting reports geopolitically versus Apple. You're reading articles about how the government is cracking down, that it's becoming harder line, kind of almost Maoist. And then you see numbers from Apple, and it's not like they've said, you know what, we will not let you buy Apple. If anything, it's almost as if they're saying, you know what, Apple is exempt from geopolitics. David, a lot of that, I think, is Tim Cook's graciousness. I just think that he has not been, I think he's worked well with everyone. Because think about it. They're not a part of the Huawei miasma.
Right, right. Jim, I'm letting you focus on Apple. I've been sort of trying to focus on the carriers and what's going to happen there.
AT&T was remarkable, David. I read
AT&T
through everything.
AT&T had a very strong day yesterday. We talked to Hans Vestberg from Verizon earlier this week when they reported earnings, T-Mobile, of course. But the question continues to be, is this going to be a more promotional environment than is typical? Everybody wants to keep telling you normal, normal, and that's what Hans Vestberg said. That's what John Stevens, the CFO of AT&T, told me yesterday during a phone call as well. Normal. The analysts, though, Jim, who follow the company, say not normal, that the numbers are bigger in terms of the subsidies for the iPhone 12, and that it is going to be reflective of more price war hitting margin. And then everybody, of course, talks about how their network is the best. I mean, it makes your head spin in terms of everybody has their own argument.
Right. You know, what's interesting, David, is that we had John Legere on his last appearance, and he said there will be more competition than ever. And I remember just thinking, what is this guy in the magenta shirt? Because he really had the guts to come on and say this. He may have been dead right, David, when he said there would be more competition, because I don't remember all three of these companies in a grab like this. Amazing. Stop looking at the Daniel Jones video and focus on your job.
It's mesmerizing.
It is hypnotic, Jim. Let's get the opening bell and a look at some breath as it fills in. You guys were talking Gap a couple of segments ago, Jim, and I see Oppie cuts Best Buy to market perform 125.
I hated that call.
Somewhat that street expectations for post-pandemic prospects have turned too optimistic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, cost pressures. They are Best Buy is in control here. They've done a remarkable job. I think people, I look, the Opco note, I'm not going to say is completely wrongheaded, but when you need help to buy something, you don't go to Amazon. You actually go to Best Buy. And look, I find you can, if you know what you're doing, you can go to Costco, okay, for big stuff. Otherwise, you can go to Amazon. But if you actually have a question, there's a human being. Now, sometimes that human being works for the company that you're buying something from. But I think that this note underestimates. David, have you done any buying of any goods that are over your head?
Over my head being bigger than I am? Is that what you're saying? I'm sorry.
No, David, that would be the Mac. No, I'm talking about then when you have to go and say, look, I understand. I mean,
not something I can understand.
Like when I forget it was, Andrew Ross Sorkin was talking about the Genius Bar.
Yes.
And he went, I find when I go and buy something for my kids that's not an Apple, I want to ask a question. And there's these people at Best Buy, and they can answer questions. Carl, it is more fun when you're older to go to a Best Buy than when you're younger and kids don't need anyone. They know so much. We know so little. I mean, I got a camera here on my phone.
Just take your kids with you. That's all. I'll help you.
Huh?
Just take them with you. Then you don't need to
ask anything. It's a surprise.
That's what I do.
All right.
Jim, 10-year now, 86 basis points. Going back to June, is it time to start selling home builders and start buying banks?
I mean, Pulte Home is the one you want to watch because Pulte Home reported good numbers and got a very big upgrade this morning. If Pulte Home cannot rally, then I think yes. Yesterday was the beginning of the regional bank rally. I thought that was premature because one day does not a trend make. But I will say that that this is a group, the home builders, that I think is reacting more to a supply shortage than it is to rates, because rates are still very, very low. So you might have the best of both worlds here. I think that this is a moment where there are a lot of people who want to rotate into groups that have not moved. Oil off of the consolidation, and the banks, because they're just so inexpensive. Let's watch Goldman. I think the papers are very wrong about saying that Goldman, this is another disgrace for Goldman. I think the clawback to the executives, David, you know the clawback was rather shocking and amazing, not unlike when Maxwell Bonds, Ghislaine's father, right, Robert Maxwell,
yes,
when he defrauded people and Goldman had to, their execs had to reach in their pocket. I think that was good because it means the shareholders didn't have to reach in their pocket.
That's going back a long way. But yeah, Wilfred Frost reporting on that yesterday for us, a fairly significant sum and involving former execs, some current as well, but former, including, of course, former CEO Lloyd Blankfein.
Right.
Having to give back some comp.
Yeah, David, you know that when you read about that, there was a moment where it looked like it was too good to be true for Goldman that I think you would have been flagged. But
that's the question.
Yeah.
And their competitors will say, and David Solomon will certainly take issue with this, but they'll say, come on, man, the risk, what you were getting paid on that should have, a lot of red flags should have gone off right away.
They have a letter from the guy who was the head of the country.
Yeah.
Who knew that he was part of the mob? But look, I think to have that behind Goldman is big. And the fact my charitable trust is a shareholder, I sent David Solomon a note saying thank you for actually not making the shareholders pay for every penny
right.
of this. Thank you for standing up.
Jim, sticking with financials, and we see at the bottom of the screen there, we talked Intel, but we haven't talked American Express. It is down.
Right.
You know, you and I both know CEO Steve Squeri. What's your sense there in terms of what is going on with a quarter in which, what did they do? Net income of $1.1 billion, about $1.30 a share. Not about. That's what it was. Obviously, well down from a year ago.
Right. But I thought that the decision to spend a lot of money was on small business and advertising and getting. They actually added people. The actual T&E that we're so used to thinking is in American Express bailiwick is not as big as we thought. And contactless has helped them tremendously. Contactless without keyboard, the keyboard being allegedly one of the most dangerous areas in COVID. I was surprised at how good it was, given the fact that American Express is, you know, Carl, look, we think of American Express as what you business traveler pays with. But it turns out that the consumer spends a lot of money on American Express. It would not surprise me that not this quarter current, but the quarter after that, that you'll start seeing some of the benefit of the spend that Steve Squeri is doing now. I think Steve Squeri is a thoughtful person who's thinking out more than just 3 months.
Yeah, I mean, there is this lingering fear, Jim, as you know, that the delinquency story is really a rolling story that will hit us in Q1, Q2, and that to see the banks start to take off some of those loss provisions is, I don't know, some argue premature.
Well, Capital One, though, is pretty good. The losses at American Express were remarkably good. I think the issue with American Express, frankly, is the closure of restaurants and the lack of travel. But yesterday, Gary Kelly, in a very, I think, understated way, gave you a sign that the travelers are coming back. So there are probably going to be people who have missed the last few days of the bank rally in Morgan Stanley and J.P. Morgan, who after a day will come back to American Express. David, American Express is a company that is a consumer company that happens to have a lot of business spend.
But I do wonder on the business spend, and we talked to Gary Kelly about it yesterday, Jim, and he said, listen, my opinion's worth what it's worth, which is not much. I mean, I'm kind of paraphrasing what he said in terms of when they come back, the business traveler. We've talked a lot about it. I just don't think, based on what I'm hearing, that you're ever going to see the level of business travel that you once did. Will there be travel? Of course. Right. There may even be a good amount of it, but it won't be what it was. They're just,
we discovered
people are not getting on planes to do things they used to. And by the way, we're not even talking about the what the advances in Zoom are going to be like over the next 5 years.
5G Zoom?
That's going to be like and how that's going to make it even easier to conduct these kinds of business. How many mergers and acquisitions have been done via Zoom at this point? Even due diligence to some extent.
How many investments have been made? Salesforce had its best quarter ever.
You know, venture capitalists.
Press the flesh.
Yeah. It's amazing what you've been able to accomplish, and therefore I do think that you're going to see a somewhat muted return in terms of business travel.
Carl? The idea that you're going to hug or handshake is done, okay? So you do not have that edge of say, oh, you know, the big, how are you doing? No, stay away from me. Stay away from me. And I think that to stay away from me is, makes it so that Zoom is there. David's laughing. But when you have those two masked men get together, you know, it's like the Lone Rangers are hanging out. And I'm pro-mask. I think that this is different era.
Our former colleague, Rebecca Jarvis, tweeted the other day. She said, what practice that you had pre-COVID will you not go back to? And all the replies on Twitter were handshakes and, to some degree, Jim, getting coffee out of home, because people are getting used now to making their coffee in the house, and they think maybe post-COVID they don't necessarily go back to a pre-COVID habit.
Well, you know, there are some people who are saying that the lack of spend of that coffee at home is actually impacting, which I find it's not that expensive unless you're going to get the triple venti cappuccino with skim wet, which is more than $6 at Starbucks. Yeah. Starbucks actually doing some great allocation, taking advantage of the rents that are being cut and stores that are being closed and putting in express lanes. At Chipotle, by the way, doing very good. I thought Chipotle should have been up yesterday.
They'll always find a way. Guys, you know, Jim, you just mentioned consolidation in the oil sector, which we have been seeing. Of course, Pioneer deal this week. We had the Conoco deal. That was this week, too. The Contra. This, it's funny. Beginning of the week. It came up, obviously, in the debate yesterday in terms of climate change. Towards the end of the debate, the two candidates going back and forth on that. But, you know, I wanted to come back to, it's just interesting. NextEra was in the news a few weeks ago, if you recall, when the Journal reported on at least a foray they had made to Duke Energy. Huge, highly regulated utility, of course, in this country. We talked about it at the time. The two of them are. Taking a look, you know, it's funny, it just drew my attention to NextEra in general, which has a larger market cap now than ExxonMobil. Take a look at the performance of these two stocks.
A growth utility, isn't that extraordinary?
A growth utility, it's the largest user of renewables to generate electric power in this country. It has grown through acquisition. Look at that. Isn't that amazing?
That's incredible.
That tells a story, doesn't it, right there? Sometimes charts don't. That does.
That does.
And by the way, on the On the Duke Energy front, you know, there had been some expectation, I think, about from people close to Duke in terms of wondering whether NextEra would try to come back in a more formal way or perhaps with even an unsolicited. You know, you can never say these things are completely dead. From what I'm hearing, though, NextEra seems to have moved on.
Yeah, it's my understanding.
The prospect of Florida and what would have gone on there in terms of any chance of really getting it through, how long it would take, what the number really needed to be, despite the fact that with that stock, they could pay a very high price. I am hearing that they're likely to have moved on. Can't say definitively at this point, but did want to share that as well.
But you can't do a hostile
in terms of Duke, which, by the way, did still have about 10 bucks in it from when the Journal reported that story.
You know, speaking of the debate, I mean, a lot of times what you want to think about in the debate is what's not talked about. There were no attacks on the managed care companies. They skated through. So what happens? United Health, which, by the way, is the principal one that people talk about because it decided to leave the Obamacare exchanges, and the stock, it wasn't attacked, and boom, well, it's a winner. This group's a winner simply because they weren't mentioned. They were not vilified, even as the Obamacare plan at various times was attacked by the current president. So I do think that they were the winners. There's the winners. Because no one took a shot at him. Pretty interesting. David, there were a lot of shots taken.
Carl?
No, I did want to ask you, it happened very late in the debate, but I bet you, I guarantee you, the next few days, we're going to hear a lot more about Biden and fracking and oil and Pennsylvania and Texas.
Yes.
And I wonder if you think that was a surprise or if it's an echo of what we're already beginning to see from TV commercials and white papers out of BP and Exxon.
Well, I think that there are issues. For instance, when we had Scott Sheffield, the one who runs Pioneer on Mad Money, they don't have one of the issues they said about why they're so excited about the companies. They have no federal land. And that's about saying Biden can't hurt us, okay, with the belief that Biden is going to stop fracking. Pennsylvania, the president was very on point saying that that Biden has not been exactly clear. I think that's fair. I'm not saying he's against fracking. He's not exactly clear. But the oil people, the oil men, so to speak, and women, Occidental, are very concerned that they'll lose federal land under Biden, where, of course, the president, given the fact that he said he wants to drill in Anwar,
yeah,
I'm still struggling with that one.
Yeah.
Would certainly not put any limits on any place.
Anywhere. Yeah.
No.
Carl?
A lot to digest from last night. Let's get to Bob Pisani.
Good morning, guys. Happy Friday. So 3-1 advancing to declining stocks. Nice, but pretty muted week overall. I'll tell you what's not muted. Look at the sectors. Banks are moving up. These yields moving up here. That's the KBE ETF there. That's up 7% this week. There's your big winner right now. Industrials, energy fair, tech's down primarily because of Intel and the semiconductors are weighing on it. Speaking of Intel, we'll show you the earnings. Not many earnings misses this quarter so far, a small number. But if you miss, heaven help you. You can see here Intel to the downside. American Express also down a little bit. But Cleveland Cliffs did well. Illinois Toolworks had very good numbers. Capital One just killed it. And we're seeing a little bit of price moves on that. That's something we haven't seen a lot. Companies beating good numbers, but they're not seeing a lot of price moves. So we're a quarter way through earnings season. I'd say we have excellent results overall. We've been putting these numbers up all week. Beating the companies so far have been beating by 20%. That's huge. The historic beat is 3 or 4 or 5%. So way above expectations. What we're not seeing is price moves. If you look at the S&P 500, we topped out the day before earnings start. October 12th, we were 35.50 or so. Now we're 34.50 or so. That we haven't really done that much since the earnings season started. Even among those reporting earnings, the price gains have been minimal. JP Morgan watches this. Companies that beat only have had a gain of about 0.1% the day after. That's pretty minimal. But if you miss, you missed by about 4%. You saw what happened to Amex and Intel and some of these other ones. And some of the others that we had this week that missed, well, they're down even more here. So your Union Pacific had a miss, Kimberly-Clark, IBM. These are for the week what they're doing. But you see, any miss here is penalized pretty severely. So far, the revisions, what we want to know is how things going in the fourth quarter. Upward revisions, pretty modest here. So we're down about 13%. Now we're down about 12%. This is the fourth quarter we're looking at, which is what everybody cares about. So the problem here, guys, is excellent earnings results are not translating into big price moves, nor is it translating into particularly big fourth quarter revisions on the upside here. I think the problem is very simple. We know all about it. Stimulus slash vaccine slash reopening slash the election overlay is really complicated efforts to figure out what the prices are, what the right prices are. That's why everybody's looking forward to get past the election and past some of these events, and then we'll figure out what the real prices are. Guys, back to you.
All right, Bob. We'll see you in a little bit, Bob Pisani. Going to get some PMI composite numbers here. Let's get to Rick Santelli.
Yes, we are waiting the October, and these are preliminary, Carl, which means we'll toss them when we get the finals later in the month for the market, MARKIT PMIs. On manufacturing, 53.3, arguably a bit light to expectations, but they do make the 1, 2, 3, fourth number in a row that is in the 50s, which is expansion, of course. On the services side, a little bit stronger number based on expectations, 56.0. Now, that's sequentially higher than the 54.6 in the rearview mirror, as is the manufacturing headline, but that one only by a tenth versus 53.2 and the current read of 53.3. Finally, if you put it all together into the final composite, it's 55.5 versus 54.3. So we are putting a string of expansions in a row here, and this is a good thing. Now let's go to the charts. It's all about interest rates this week and their rise, and how they're doing it is statistically and technically and historically pretty bullish for more of higher rate type trade. Let's look at a two-day of 10s. And you look at yesterday's high yields, were basically the same as today's. 30-year, pretty much the same scenario for 10s. You know, just a whisker under 87 for 30-year bonds, a whisker under 169. Why is that important? Well, open the 10-year up to one-week chart, and you can see we build upon the previous day's highs ever since retail sales a week ago Friday. Today, they're basically sideways. I would look for more to the upside if this is going to continue. Now, let's go to the long maturity 30-year, and let's go back to July. Why? Because this particular week is a huge week for 10s and 30s. Double-digit gains. It's the biggest week since, well, the week of August 7th through August 13th. And if you look on the left side of that chart, you see those jack-o'-lantern teeth? Well, right after that is the week I'm referring to. So it's extending just like this week is. When it comes to the yield curve, all yield curves are steepening. 10s minus 2s the most since February 2018. And finally, here's a 1 week of the dollar index. It's down almost one penny on the week. A week where interest rates are moving to the upside. Very counterintuitive. Of course, Carl, Jim, David, back to you and have a great weekend.
All right, you too, Rick. We'll see you later. Everything Rick said is one reason why financials are leading today, trying to ride the coattails of those higher rates. Infotech is down, as is the NASDAQ. The Dow's trying to close a down week on an up note. Back in a moment.
It was clear that for whatever reason, this was not going to be as successful as Jeffrey and I had hoped. And so we took stock of where we were and we said the best thing to do, the honorable thing to do, is to return money to shareholders when we knew this was not going to have a path forward as a viable standalone business. So we feel like we made the right decision, a very difficult decision, but the right one for shareholders.
I have a bottomless well of need to win. This smarts. It hurts a lot. Very disappointed that that we have disappointed our investors and our employees. And so for me, I got to get back up on that horse and go find the next mountain to charge up to. And it's the only thing I know how to do. And I have a lot to prove.
Jeffrey Katzenberg, Meg Whitman talking to Julia Boorstin and the rest of us here on Squawk Alley yesterday. David, I wonder what you thought of the interview itself, which was remarkable, and also some of the takeaways, I think somewhat surprising takeaways from the shutdown itself.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, kudos to you and John and, of course, Julia for getting them, because it was an extraordinary interview, and I did tweet about it, and a lot of people seem to follow that. Just because it's so rare that we see two executives come on and say, hey, you know what? We screwed this up. We didn't get it right. We misjudged. And we take the blame and we're moving on. A bottomless well of need to win, I thought was an interesting comment from Mr. Katzenberg as well. But that's what we know him as. And that's why I think a lot of people, despite their questions about the business model early on, said, Well, if anybody's going to figure it out, it's going to be Katzenberg and Meg Whitman, who I happen to know quite well, who is extraordinary in terms of her work ethic and her intellect. But they didn't make it work. By the way, I would add, they didn't put a lot of money of their own in there, from what I understand, which I think is interesting. It doesn't mean that it hurts any less. But neither one, both of them, of course, are extraordinarily wealthy people. You know, it may have been as little as $5 million from Katzenberg, $8 million from Meg Whitman. They may have gone up over time, but that is an interesting little component of this, Carl. But just fascinating interview that you guys conducted yesterday with them.
Yeah, and hopefully not the last time we've heard from them. And obviously, we're going to hear from Jeffrey and Meg again, just a question of what their next projects are going to be. Quick break here. We're back in a moment. Jim, we can't wait to hear about Mattel tonight.
Up 10%. Remember, it's not just Barbie, but American Girl, which had not been that good when I spoke to Mr. Kreis last time. It really had a great quarter. So it's just firing Hot Wheels. This company is doing incredibly well. The one thing I would point out is I think Hasbro's doing well, too. This is the time to stay at home and play with your kids. And I love it. Positive story about the pandemic.
Yep. It's going to be an interesting holiday season. Inventories are lean, Jim. Yeah. You have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. See you Monday.
All right. We'll see you tonight. Of course, Mad Money tonight, 6 p.m. Eastern time.
You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation. Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.